Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the UK Tech Weekly Podcast. It's Friday, the weather is horrible, but it's okay because I'm tucked up in a cozy pod with Henry Burrell.
Morning.
And Scott Carey.
Hello.
To talk about the good and the bad of the week's technology news. Scott, why don't we start with you? What's going on at Google?
Yeah, we'll start with the bad, and I mean, it is really bad. This story broke in the New York Times yesterday, late in the UK. It would have been in the morning or in the afternoon over in the US. And basically, it's a wide-ranging investigation into what's been going on over at Google. The headline basically focuses on Andy Rubin, who is an ex-executive at Google. He is basically the founder, the creator of the Android operating system.
We'll come back to that point, but yeah. Okay.
And he's explain to the listeners why he is important.
So his company was acquired by Google, and he then basically built up the Android operating system there and embedded it into 80% of the world's phones. So he was a highly powerful executive at the company who very quickly rose through the ranks and was paid a lot of money while he was there. The Times has now revealed that during his time at Google, he was involved in various incidents of sexual misconduct with fellow employees, and basically it was hushed up, and he was paid a $90 million severance package and given a bit of a hero's send-off by the founders. And allowed to kind of ride off into the sunset without any of this coming out at the time. And that was in 2014, so that was 4 years ago.
But more recently than this story, right, it was revealed that he had acted inappropriately.
Yeah, so the information reported that his departure from the company wasn't quite as rosy as it was made out to be. They clearly weren't able to get the facts they needed to report what actually had occurred. But they did report that he left because of some accusations of sexual misconduct while at the company, and was still paid off, and it was all hushed up.
So the position we're in at the moment is that these are all accusations, right?
These are all accusations. So yeah, it's important for me to say that he has responded to the New York Times story saying that it contains numerous inaccuracies. He said that so the accusation against him was quite similar to the Weinstein accusations, in that an ex colleague of his said that she was coerced into having sex with him in a hotel room. He says these are false allegations and they are part of a smear campaign by my ex-wife to disparage me during a divorce and custody battle. A divorce battle which I assume is worth many, many millions of dollars.
Yeah, God. So is it... I don't know which side I'm going to eventually fall down in this case, but is it fair to say innocent until proven guilty, and they were right to give him his money if it hasn't been proven yet? Where do you stand on that?
Well, the rest of the piece is far wider ranging than just Andy Rubin. It talks about the kind of the early days of Google, where Larry Page actually dated Marissa Mayer when she was a young engineer at the company. Sergey Brin also has been accused of having relationships with fellow employees. And then David Drummond, who's their chief legal officer, it also came out that he was having an extramarital relationship with a fellow member of the legal team over at Google. The head of search also was... he's been accused of sexual malpractice, basically, during his time at the company before he left, and was paid off a huge amount of money. So what it kind of paints a picture of is a company that is permissive to relationships between employees, and whether that is acceptable or not is kind of down to the listener. But it definitely paints a picture of a culture where that was acceptable.
And that then creates the possibility for more clearly defined misconduct, as we are starting to see.
Yeah, so... it's I think the thing to take away from this is A, the culture aspect of it, but B, there were some kind of striking statistics that Google came out to kind of defend themselves, but I think they kind of ended up shooting themselves in the foot.
I don't know how I feel about this tactic.
Yeah, they came out and they were like, look, we have a zero tolerance policy towards allegations of sexual misconduct within the company, and over the last 2 years we have severed 48 people from the company without pay. And it's like, well 48 people in 2 years probably That's... suggests that you've got a culture problem.
Yeah. And that doesn't excuse the fact that you also paid off one person $90 million.
Put that in context, they actually got the details, or claimed, the New York Times claimed to have got the details of that severance package. And apparently it was done in a way where he was getting paid $2.1 million a month into his bank account for the last 4 years. And his final payment is about to come in.
Yeah.
He was also, there is also in this piece a line about him going to Google and asking for $14 million loan so that he could buy a beachfront property in Japan. That was given at 1% interest rate from the company. He basically was given a bonus after these accusations were brought internally. So internally, the company were aware of these accusations, but they still upped his bonus to $80 million 1 year, with the CEO saying that he deserved to be better compensated for his work on Android.
One thing that struck at me on this article is that there was 1 year when he was caught with sex videos on his computer.
Bondage sex videos.
Bondage sex videos. Thank you for clarifying that.
Salacious detail. Need not go unmentioned.
It's very good. and I think many people would expect to be fired for that.
It's a red flag.
His bonus, he still got a bonus that year. It was just smaller.
They docked his bonus.
They still got a bonus and certainly didn't get fired. And one would think that might have been a red flag to future misconduct, I guess. There's a couple of questions I have immediately, and I don't know how big or small they are, but one is...
So one of them, who is Andy Rubin?
Well, we can talk more about that, but one of them is, why has it come out now? And the other one is, why would they willingly pay $90 million that apparently they had no legal requirement to pay? That seems like sort of a waste of $90 million they could have spent on something else. I don't know, you have any thoughts on those two questions?
The first question, I believe the answer is that it's the moment we are living in. It's the Me Too effect. So the investigation into these allegations by the New York Times, who have been really front and center on a lot of the Me Too coverage, I think people are starting to feel a little bit more empowered to come out with these accusations and to go to the press and to actually kind of make them concrete, whereas in the past they would have felt that these accusations wouldn't have been taken seriously, and for good reason, because it looks like the HR department at Google were quite happy kind of brushing them under the carpet. There was an interesting line from, let me try and find it, from Stacey Sullivan, who was, no, not Stacey Sullivan, sorry. It was the part of the legal team, and she basically said, I felt like I was the liability, because she went to Alphabet with the accusations against David Drummond, who was the chief legal officer, and they basically came back and said, we take these accusations seriously, we believe that these relationships between people in management and people in their teams, whether it's direct or not direct, are inappropriate. And what she said was basically what they were essentially saying to her was, one of you is going to have to leave, and it's in no way going to be the man, the senior man. And that kind of gets to the crux of the problem here in terms of bringing these accusations, because women tend to fear that their career will be at risk if they bring these accusations out in public. And for good reason, because that's what happens. She actually lost her position at Google.
Well, they regard it as a PR problem. Mm-hmm. And so they respond with confidentiality agreements.
Well, that's the one thing that the Me Too, has really brought that to the fore, that HR is actually not there for employees. It's there to protect the company.
Yeah.
Your second question was, why pay him $90 million? And I think that comes down to the way that Google operates. Google is has always been generous at paying its executives, and I believe that the founders of the company probably believe that he had earned that money for what he had done at Android, and I think they they might not have been aware of the allegations. They might have been okay just separating, compartmentalizing those two parts of his personality. The fact that he was obviously a brilliant executive that did a lot of good work to bring Android to a lot of people and made the company tons of money in the mobile ad market. And they felt that he deserved $90 million regardless. There's no way to know how aware they were and how happy they were to kind of morally separate those two things.
I suppose there is a question whether anybody deserves $90 million.
It's also worth noting that since that severance package, in what year? 2014?
2014, but then paid over 4 years.
Paid over that time. Since then, Google also helped fund Andy Rubin's Essential Phone project.
Yeah.
Where he left and created what he thought would be like a really great competitor to Google, mainly.
Yeah, they also basically gave him a blank check to start up a robotics division within Google X.
Yeah.
After he stepped down, basically when they merged the Android and Chrome divisions, Sundar Pichai won the power battle, who is now the CEO. So he decided to kind of go in a different direction and do a robotics thing over at Google X, which they're like moonshot department, and they gave him $90 million to do that. And then he left, and then he set up Essential and a venture capitalist firm, and Google invested in both of those, I believe. So he's done well out of Google, including his $14 million beachfront property in Japan.
And at some point, they must have become aware on a corporate level of what he was accused of.
I mean, the company were aware. The accusations were brought to HR. It's whether HR try and protect
the higher executives,
the executives from these.
There are some cultural questions here.
Many.
You alluded to briefly, but a couple that spring to my mind are, one is the question of when you start up, and you have a small sort of piratical company culture, it's very difficult for a company to move from that to being one of the largest valued companies in the world. Developing sort of corporate responsibility and corporate practices. How can companies do that? How can companies go from this, oh, well, there's only 10 of us and we're, you know, a bunch of lads in Silicon Valley and we all date the people we work with?
Because we are only at work. And I get that. I understand that. Yeah. That's human nature. Like, if you're spending huge amounts of time with certain people, it's not surprising that Marissa Mayer had a relationship with one of the founders, because they were probably one of the first 60 people there and they were working all day and they were, you know, living the high life. And they were both single at the time. But then, how do you transition that culture to something that is a bit safer over time?
But it isn't just, I'm not just speaking to sort of a sexual culture, but also sort of a wider thing of like the way that we, and these again are accusations, but the way they sort of spoke to each other, the approach was of, again, in somebody's basement, just they're just mates, they don't have any formality, and they would call each other stupid and incompetent and as an executive thing, you know, to their employees. And you look at a company like Google today and you assume that they would have proper HR structures in place, but they've had to develop that very quickly because they've risen so quickly. And you look at other companies as well, like Apple, the one I always bring it back to, the way that Steve Jobs used to operate was in many ways utterly shocking, inhumane, because he'd risen so quickly and he didn't come from a corporate background. He came from a, we built some computers in our garage background. I don't know what the answer is.
Do you think that, vaguely? I take your point, but do you think that perhaps this Me Too movement is going to help unravel a bit of the HR cover-ups of some of the companies that are basically hierarchical and money-driven enough to hide these sorts of things? Because we all kind of semi-delighted in the downfall of Travis Kalanick.
Yeah.
But that was a company that rose debatably even quicker than Google in a very short space of time and had absolutely no structure with which to hide those accusations, even though it was a rich company. Whereas Google is 20 years old, and if you've got enough, they've got enough history of that sort of thing to bury it. Is this all going to come to the surface because of this, or is it easier to hide it because it's a bigger company?
We're seeing it happen here in England this week. I mean, the Philip Green story that came out this week
couldn't have happened to a nicer bloke.
No, it showed that there is an impact here, and that things are happening, and these accusations are starting to come out now. And even though in this country he had injunctions and non-disclosure agreements and all the rich and powerful tools at his disposal, he still lost out eventually because of some weird parliamentary rule.
Oh, that's great.
Where someone was able to basically bring his name to the fore without any consequences. So
I think that's a great That's a great thing.
Oh, it's brilliant.
It's sometimes a great thing. The specific use in this case is sort of, because it is an ongoing case, it may prejudice the case.
Okay.
The usual use of parliamentary privilege, if I'm using the right, is to wait until the case is over. And if there was an ongoing injunction, then they just go, well, by the way, this is who it was.
Okay, take your point that it might negatively affect.
Cause problems with the case.
But the court's decision to grant an injunction saying that it's not in the public interest is farcical.
That does seem odd, yeah. That does seem odd. There is something specific to tech, I think, that we've seen in recent years, this sort of Superman, Ayn Rand sort of mentality, mm-hmm. that the people at the top can do whatever they like. This sort of disruption philosophy that it doesn't matter what happens to everybody else, that other people aren't as important as you, that I'm hoping may be to some extent punctured by this case and by the Me Too movement in general.
I think it'd be
privileged
difficult.
White men can't do whatever they like.
Yeah, I think it'd be difficult to drastically change that culture without actually making that culture more diverse, and tech is still a hugely male-dominated industry. I think what is happening is that people are having to sort of rein in their behaviour now because they see that there are consequences, and for the last 20, 30, 40 years, there have been very few consequences for people in power.
That's exactly the issue here, isn't it? Yeah. The lack
yeah.
of consequences. Do you think, all right, last question, Scott, do you think this will damage Google in any material sense?
Yeah, I think this will have a huge ripple effect for Google. I think they're going to have to reckon with this pretty publicly. Financially, maybe not. but we've been talking about Google quite a lot recently, and they've been having a lot of leaks and they've been having a lot of problems. And it's like the Facebook thing. It really is a snowball effect. And it when you're dealing with scandal after scandal, problem after problem, that has to affect your company because you can't be doing what you're best at doing if you're constantly dealing with process and scandals and PR disasters. I definitely think it will have an impact. It'll be interesting to see what actually, you know, comes of this article and whether Andy Rubin wins his custody battle, and whether it comes out that there's maybe some exaggeration there, like he said. But the fact that it's out there now is hugely damaging to the company and the people involved.
Agreed. Okay, let's take a short break. And after that, we'll talk about some phones. Henry Burrell, yesterday you emerged blinking into the sunlight from Apple's cave of one.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Yeah. What treasures did they give you?
I got one of six new colourful wonders. Actually, I got the least colourful version. The black iPhone XR.
So did they do a specific 10R event?
No. So Apple, back in September, did their normal iPhone event where they announced the iPhone XS, which David here reviewed, the XS Max, and also the 10R. 10R was slightly late to production.
Of course.
We sort of always sort of think, oh, they didn't get it ready in time or whatever, but it's probably quite a clever marketing ploy to release the more affordable, but not necessarily affordable, iPhone a couple of months, or no, 1 month afterwards. So it's out today as we record on the 26th of October. There wasn't an event. I just had a briefing with Apple yesterday where they took us through what's new about it, why they did some of the things that they did, and then we were cagey with the questions that I asked them, obviously.
This is the first official briefing I think you've had with Apple.
Yep. And I've popped my Apple cherry.
Yeah. I've spoken to them a few times, not a lot. How did you find them as a sort of as a PR operation?
Yeah, as a side point, pleasant. But it's always sort of built up as though they're quite secretive and they're sort of maybe quite controlling. It's not the only company that makes you come in, but it's one of the only companies that sort of asks that journalists come in and they get a little product demo, and that sometimes stuff is just sent to us in the post. But it's kind of anything. It's the kind of whole experience of it. It was just me and a couple of other journalists. They had the six phones laid out. There was a bloke from the retail store. There was a bloke who was also taking us through the product.
So it's quite stage managed.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's all pretty slick. But the phone itself, I'm still not sure how to feel about it. I've only been using it for half a day. But so just for the listener, iPhone XS starts at £1,000 or dollars. The iPhone XR starts at £750 or dollars for a 64 gigabyte phone. Pretty clever in making a iPhone look cheaper, but it's whether people think it's cheap. So yeah. I would look back to the iPhone 7 from only 2 years ago, which was the flagship when it was released, and the cheapest one was £599. So you're paying, £150 extra. You can still buy the 8 and the 7 today, but this is the 751, and I mean, it's going to sell so many phones. It's got the same design as the iPhone 10, the same notch design. It's got the same processor. It's got kind of not the same camera. It's got one camera.
Yeah.
So that's the main difference for people if you want to look into photography.
But it can still do portrait mode, just not quite as well.
It can only do portrait mode on people. So the iPhone XS, as we were told yesterday after I inquired, has two cameras. And the second camera is for telephoto and also for creating like an SLR blur type effect. And that also means that it's mainly using hardware to discern the subject of what you're pointing your phone at. Not all phones are great at doing this because they're kind of having to do some trickery to work out what it is. Normally people take portraits of people. But the iPhone XS can do it of, you know, buildings or cans of Coke or your dog or whatever. The iPhone XR can't do that. If you open the camera app and put it on portrait mode and point it at something, it even comes up saying, no person detected. And it will only be able to work it out as a person because it's using computational processing to do it. So it's using software rather than hardware. It's what Google's got really good at on the Pixel phones, which only have one lens. But Google was kind of winning the race here. It's very good. And it has been good at doing that for 3 years now. This is Apple's first time doing it. So the XR's got one wide-angle lens on it. And basically Apple has... It looks pretty good. I can show you later, but it's only worked out how to do it on people so far.
It's odd that they would make it so specific, though. So they've sort of chosen to exclude
they
things,
have chosen
things like
to
dogs,
only,
for example, pet pictures.
And in the briefing, when I was like, the guy was pretty good. He was honest enough to say, yeah, if you want to take stuff of your dog or whatever, there's the XS you can buy. And he said that on more than one occasion. So, like, for instance, I mean, we're getting in the weeds a little bit and I can
move
on.
If you buy a XS, can't afford a dog.
Yeah, exactly.
You gotta choose one. XR and a pet.
It can only do three. There's like six kinds of portrait lighting that the X and the XS can do. The XR can only do three of them because the others need the second camera.
Yeah.
For most people...
I don't like portrait lighting, though.
No, it doesn't look very good.
Isn't the display different as well on the XR?
Yes. So the XR has a LCD display, not an OLED display.
Yeah.
So the iPhone X from last year was the first iPhone with an OLED screen. It, in my opinion, personal opinion, looks amazing. It's one of the best calibrated OLEDs on the market. It's like genuinely very good. And that is where Apple talks a big game, but it has a right to.
How do they market this one? They call it something ridiculous.
They call it Liquid Retina.
There you go.
So the screen, the people...
That's Alan Partridge-esque, isn't it?
People, no,
liquid it's retina. That is Liquid Retina.
So retina is a marketing term used since the iPhone 4, I think.
Yeah.
To say that it's a marketing term. It's not a technological term. It just means that your eye can't discern a pixel unless you put your face right next to it.
Fine.
You got Liquid Retina, which is just a reference to the liquid part of LCD. And it's not 1080p, which is kind of the baseline that people expect in phones these days. I say people, I mean nerds.
Yeah.
Expect me, expect like to be a 1080 HD panel. The 10R isn't, it's 720. But to be honest, not many people are going to notice that. And sitting on a shelf, it's going to look quite attractive because it's larger than the iPhone XS as well. But that's kind of, again, they're kind of spinning the reason why it's larger. So it sort of looks attractively larger. 6.1-inch display rather than 5.8 on the XS. But the reason is, if you look at
the... It's got a border, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's got a bit more of a border. So the notch always intrudes anyway, but then the actual bezel around the outside is larger. And that's because, let me tell you, that an LCD needs a backlight, whereas OLEDs do not.
Interesting.
So in order for Apple to keep the aesthetic, which they like, which is not having a big chin at the bottom of the phone... You can see down there where you swipe up from. Doesn't have a chin. Lots of Android phones opt to have small notches, but then big chins because they need to put some sort of component, sometimes an LCD backlight in there. Apple has opted to make basically the screen a bit bigger so that it can then put a larger border on it to fit in a backlight. And they told us that they've had to precision cut the screens into this shape, which takes a little bit more manufacturing, which is why I reckon they have taken 3D touch out of the iPhone XR, which is a feature that was on every iPhone, even the LCD one, since the iPhone 6S, where you could long press an icon and get like a submenu.
Sort of hard press.
Now you can't do that. You just bring up the delete thing. So they have taken that away.
But it is odd the way that 3D touch has gone, because basically nobody uses it. I actually have
realised in the past day how much I use it.
Really?
I used to use it for shortcuts. I used to use it to preview emails and mail so that they weren't read. I used to use hard press to open links in Twitter and stuff like that.
Do you find that in a lot of cases you can, as you said, you can long press on non-3D touch screens and it does some of the same things, but not all.
Sometimes, yeah. The example they used in the briefing when I asked them why, they didn't say it was a cost-saving measure, even though I reckon it is. They were just saying... that they don't think, but he kind of almost said, not the words, but people don't use it. And also that they haven't found a problem with people's workflow on iPad by not having it, because iPads don't have 3D touch.
They'll know that. They'll have data that shows that not a lot of people are using it.
But what you basically, this is still a good proposition, because we always talk about RRPs, right? But people still went out and bought iPhone 10s on contracts, and people, if they want to afford an iPhone in the West at least, then they will, and they can. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see if the 10R is any cheaper on contract, but on a shelf, you'll be saving either £250 or maybe 20, 30 quid a month, maybe not that much. And you're getting a phone with a bigger screen. It's got the same processor. The battery life is already, I can tell, is great because it's powering an LCD, which takes less battery than an OLED.
It's the other way around.
No,
OLED. There are downsides of OLED. Have you had, because I know you had the iPhone 10 for a while,
yes,
which is also OLED.
Yeah.
And therefore very good. But a lot of people said it gave them headaches. There was one worry about burn-in, which I've got the iPhone
XS. Yeah, OLEDs can technically burn in. If you have a pattern on the screen a lot of the time, the Pixel 2 XL from last year suffered from it. It's basically if you haven't calibrated it very well and the quality of the panel. Yeah. If you like the Android nav buttons would burn into the screen. So if you had an all-white screen, you could see where the buttons were.
Oh, like a
ghosting image, yeah. You might see it in an OLED phone, but you might probably have to own it for 3 or 4 years and you might not even notice. The only thing you really lose on the XR is the camera and the OLED screen.
It's quite a heavy phone.
Yeah, it's a weighty one, yeah.
And it's top heavy, isn't it?
It is a little bit. Comes in 6 colours, though. Scott, you've pre-ordered one.
Yeah, I've
really?
Yeah.
We have talked on this bloody podcast for over a year about how Scott Carey needs a new phone.
I'm gleaming.
Did you say which colour? Which colour again?
White.
White, of course you are.
Because I'm a flash.
Yeah. I wasn't convinced about the white one, and we saw it yesterday. It's actually really nice.
Yeah.
It looks a bit like an old iPod. It's quite cool.
Yeah, I quite like that.
So you've got black, which I have here, and the white. There's a product red one, which Apple's making available from day one. They used to release it mid-cycle, mm-hmm. but it's here now. And then coral, which is quite nice, kind of orangey peach. The blue one, which I'm not too keen on, even though I do like blue stuff.
Yeah.
And there's a yellow as well.
I think the blue always looks a bit cheap.
Yeah, it's kind of like Victoria line yellow.
Yeah.
It needs to be more Piccadilly. I say yellow, I meant blue, sorry.
Yeah.
Too many colours.
but yeah, hook, line and sinker, I committed earlier this week. It's it's either arriving today or on Monday, depending on availability. And I got, I think I got a cracking deal.
It's clever. It's clever from Apple. Like, they're going to sell a lot of them on the shelf. Like you, the money saved, you only lose the camera and the quality of the screen, basically.
Yeah.
Which for most people, they you won't notice. If it really, really bothers you that you're not going to get the deepest blacks on your screen, then you're going to pay a bit more for the iPhone XS.
Yeah. At the end of the day, if I was going to get the XS, I was going to be paying more than £70 a month on my contract, and I'm now paying £38 a month on my contract.
Nice.
For the XS
with a little upfront payment. But...
yeah, I paid a couple of hundred upfront.
That is the clever thing. But is that you're comparing it to the XS? The XS is stupid expensive.
Yeah.
Like the sheer balls of marketing something that costs £750 as a budget phone.
No. And this is the thing.
It's astounding really. For someone that wants an Apple phone.
Yeah, there's the iPhone 8. The iPhone 8 is still on sale. The iPhone 7 6S has just gone, hasn't it?
Yeah. I looked at the 8. It's about the same price.
Some contracts, yeah.
Get 7.
No, I'm not getting a 7.
7 will be fine.
Sorry.
7 is 2 years old.
So I was going to ask you, Henry, if you were presented with a sort of non-tech savvy grandma or whatever.
Yeah.
So in this case, basically Scott. would you recommend the iPhone XR? Or would you as I'm
it's
sort
always
of
difficult
thinking,
recommending
get
the iPhones because... if we do look at the RRP, as we sometimes do, and it's sometimes not the best way to look at things, if you were just doing it on RRP, you would say, should I get an iPhone XR or should I get a Samsung Galaxy S9, which you can get on Amazon now for like £500? Yeah, you could save another £250 and get the Samsung phone, but people want an iPhone. You don't get iOS on a Samsung phone. And it is quite a clever way of Apple doing it. Last year, releasing the iPhone 8 at the same time as the 10 was a little bit... we were like, oh, what have they done that for? Because the 10 is obviously better. And lots of people did go out and buy the 10. And now they've got a staggered line where the iPhone XR looks cheap, or cheaper. And then they go, well, what's the other cheap option? And then you look at the iPhone 8 and people just go, oh, that looks like the old one.
Yeah. The thing about the XR is it in no way feels or looks cheap.
No.
It feels like a very premium product.
It is a premium product, yeah.
Which it should be at £750.
Yeah.
This is what Neil Bennett was talking about, our colleague Neil, about anchor pricing and the psychology of it.
Mm.
And the way that they've shifted the whole thing in the space of 12 months.
Yeah.
Of what is a reasonable price to pay for
100%.
A phone. It's sort of astounding.
Because 750 is obviously, you've got to remember, only the base model. 64 gigabytes, however, is enough for most people.
Yeah.
But then you can pay up to £900 for an iPhone XR for 256 gig, which some people will do.
Yeah, I mean, you're not going to need that.
No one needs that.
Another interesting shift is that the entry-level model in the iPhone and iPad lines have become recommendable now. Because you've got to the point where 64 gig is fine. I think that'll be absolutely fine.
So we're at the point now, it's crazy, where the only discernible reason we would ever recommend someone now buying the iPhone XS or XS Max. XS Max is if you want an even bigger screen than the XR. If you really care about the pixels on the phone and you want an HD screen.
So we're talking about...
and if you want the second camera.
Yeah.
Otherwise, it runs the same software. It's got the same processor. The camera is pretty good for most people. I mean, it's still a very good... it's definitely better than the iPhone 8 single lens camera.
Do you think Apple has risked...
or if you want a yellow phone.
Maybe. But do you think Apple have made the line too confusing? Because you remember there was that thing a long time ago where it was all about just iPhone, iPad, Mac, MacBook. They always try to keep it super simple. Now there's like five different screen sizes.
I would argue that the names are confusing, but the choices people make, it won't be that confusing.
Have you noticed that I say 10 now?
I haven't. He won over.
Once he's committed money to it, then he takes the trouble.
I stopped mugging off Apple by saying XR.
In a nice little interview with I think it was in Gadget this week, Phil Schiller was asked, what's the R stand for? And he was just like, I love sports cars, so R is just because it sounds like a car, which was the most white man rich thing he could have ever said. But it apparently stands for nothing. It's just because they have S and now they have R and it sounds like a car.
That's really annoying.
An expensive car.
Do you think it might be because 10R and 10S sound like words?
No, he said it's because it sounds like sports cars.
No, but that's what he says. But there must have been a rationale that the company...
or like tenor and tennis.
Exactly. They think there's any... because I think the best ever brand was the Nintendo Wii. And I think the fact that it sounds like, you know, urination was part of the thinking. I genuinely think that because it made it memorable.
Wii. I thought it was because it was like the II was two controllers. And
it's everything.
It's
Wii,
that,
play it. Don't get me started on the brand name Wii. It's so good. It's Wii as in I knew and Wii.
But Wii
it's
U
also
sucks.
The two little things. Wii U makes no sense, but Wii is such a good brand. It's so short. You don't need the word Nintendo to know to recognize it. It's got its own spelling. The spelling is meaningful because there's two I's. It's me and you. It's Wii together. Oh, it's such a good brand.
It's a shame it was such a bad console.
The Wii? Scott Carey.
This is another episode.
I think we're going to have to stop the podcast here before I brain Scott Carey with his
name. Yeah, iPhone XR, good phone, still expensive.
Cool.
I didn't do a question on the first round because it was inappropriate.
You don't need to ask questions.
You don't need to ask questions about that.
But I can do a question now. Lend me a tenner, or what's the other one though? Anyone for tennis? As in, you prefer the other one? All right, basically the question is, do you like the 10R or not?
We know the answer because I've just committed money.
So your question, all right.
And I don't know yet. I've only had it for one day.
Brilliant. Thanks, guys. Yes,
I'm in.
No worries. Just got to get the info out there.
Okay.
Thanks for listening,
everyone.
Henry's
going to go and
Henry
go and write his review.
He will be reviewing it. So.
Yeah, we're reviewing it. We've got a nice little unboxing on the channel if you want to go check out the Tech Advisor YouTube channel. And I'll be doing a video review too.
Lovely stuff.
Keep refreshing Tech Advisor for the next.
Please do. Open it on all your tabs. Get those views rolling in.
Thank you for listening. Thank you for talking to me, Henry and Scott.
No problem,
cheers.
David.
We'll be back hopefully next week with more tech chat. And until then, say goodbye, guys.
Bye, guys.
UK Tech Weekly Podcast.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia, movement that inspires. Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.